Central Virginia. Are you ready to rumble? Fasten your safety belt and hold on tight. The community watchdog is in the house. This is The Schilling Show with your host, former city councilor, Rob Schilling, on News Radio 1070 WINA.
Rob is as well known in the area as a radical Republican.
Rob Schilling is the master puppeteer.
I am extremely proud of Mr. Schilling.
Well, thank you, Dr. Turner, and welcome, fellow citizens of the world. Welcome to The Schilling Show, where the news is made, and we thank you so much for joining us weekdays from noon to 2. I want you to make an appointment with this program. We feature perspectives, analysis, commentary, and insight, things you will hear nowhere else in the Central Virginia media market. It is why this audience is growing daily from people across the political spectrum who find the content interesting and entertaining as well. We have a big day coming up on the program today. In fact, a very busy day. Almost no time at all for anything else other than calls and interviews. But that's fine because there's lots to talk about. Coming up in just a few minutes, it is one of our famous Schilling Show showdowns. David Marotta will be here with us along with David Swanson in the studio talking about the living wage. And of course, that's been in the news here in Charlottesville for many, many years. It continues to be with the city and especially with the University of Virginia. Is it a good idea? We're going to find out as we have two points of view presented. And of course, we take your calls, as always, at 977-1070. All points of view welcome here on The Schilling Show. And the amazing Leon Oliver stands by to take your phone calls politely and professionally throughout the program. Also, don't forget, I do monitor the email inbox during the course of the show. If you're not able to call in, we welcome your emails, robs@wina.com. Also want to remind you that Friday is the next edition of the Schilling Show Hotline Voicemail Caller Awards. Yes, you have the opportunity to win a prize. You can use the voicemail hotline 24 hours a day at 220-2349. If there's something on your mind, you want to rant, you want to rave, or if you have a secret tip you'd like me to look into regarding local government or other local issues, it's 220-2349. And we'll have some terrific prizes for you on Friday. Coming up in hour number two of the program, Michael DeRosso joins us, senior fellow for Homeland and National Security at the Center for Security Policy. He's going to be addressing a group in Greene County about issues of the failure of U.S. intelligence and also the inability to comprehend threats facing the United States. He's going to tell you a little about that. And then Chet Nagel will be joining us, a former Navy man, also former CIA agent, a Georgetown law graduate, among many other things, and his take on what's happening in Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Libya. So all of that coming up on the program today. Right now, we need to go to the newsmaker line and say hello to Carol Thorpe, who is the president of the Jefferson Area Tea Party. I might have just elevated you from chair to president, but Carol, you could be whatever you want.
As long as I'm not called queen, I'm okay.
Okay, that's very good. You have an event coming up actually tomorrow regarding Robert Hurt, and we want to let people know about it.
Yes, and I appreciate the opportunity, Rob. Thank you. Yes, tomorrow morning, which is March 24th, from 11 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., the Jefferson Area Tea Party is going to be hosting a rally at Congressman Robert Hurt's Charlottesville District Office. That's at 686 Berkmar Circle. That's at the intersection of Berkmar Drive and West Ryer Road across from the Charlottesville Piano Company. We're going to be hosting a rally. We're calling it We Have Your Back, and subtitled, If You Drastically Cut Spending and Defund Obamacare. We have been pleased to some degree with the $10 billion in cuts that the Congress has made over the last 5 weeks, but this is not nearly enough money and not happening nearly fast enough to help us with the economic crisis that we're in. We do commend Congressman Hurt. He did honor his pledge to vote for the repeal of Obamacare. However, last week he also voted to pass a continuing resolution to prevent a government shutdown, but it resulted in appropriations of $105 billion toward the institution of Obamacare. So that had us concerned. Congressman Hurt's on record now of saying he will not vote for any more continuing resolutions. We want him to stand by that, and also we do not want any more funding for Obamacare. So the purpose of the rally is to let him know that if he returns to Washington next week and leads with boldness and takes care of the hard work at hand, then we do indeed have his back. However, we are looking at his performance, and we just want to encourage him to know that he can take stronger steps and stronger measures to make deeper cuts and to represent his constituents. So we're inviting everybody tomorrow. Please bring a sign if you'd like to make one with you. Again, the point of this is to tell him to hold the line and do the tough job that his constituents sent him to do. And also there's a GAO report. Accountability Office just came out recently that identified $100 billion in waste. We want to strongly encourage Congressman Hurt to support the recommendations in that report as well.
Carol Thorpe, do you get the impression that Congressman Hurt has the personality type to actually take the lead on something? Because, you know, I've interviewed him a number of times, and I think that he has some good ideas, and I think he's heading in the right direction a lot of the time. However, he hasn't really struck me as a person who's going to walk into the halls of Congress with a Gadsden flag.
Well, I can't disagree with you there, Rob, but I will say this, you know, to cut any freshman congressman a little bit of slack, I know it's a big jump from from the 5th District of Virginia to the House of Representatives, so, you know, to this point, certainly to give him a little time to get his feet wet, to get used to the situation in Washington, you know, to be fair like that. You know, I don't know if he has it in him to do this. You know, my encounters with him, I mean, he's a wonderful gentleman, very polite.
Yes.
I agree he's not a what I would call a firebrand necessarily. But, you know, people, when they're encouraged to find strength in themselves, sometimes they can do things they didn't know they could do. So I would like to find out if Robert Hurt has the fire in the belly and the leadership qualities to kind of take the bull by the horns here and lead in a way that we've seen other representatives throughout the country, you know, Michelle Bachmann, Rand Paul come to mind, as well as some others. You know, there's a big job ahead here. There's big principles, and we just want to see that kind of leadership out of him. And you know, during the election, he spoke quite eloquently about defunding Obamacare, making the big cuts in Washington, you know, taking the bold steps we need to do to save America. So now we're calling on him to indeed act on those promises.
All right, Carol, give us the details one more time if people would like to join you tomorrow.
Sure, thank you. Again, it's the We Have Your Back rally tomorrow from 11 to 11:30 a.m. at Congressman Hurt's Charlottesville District Office, 686 Berkmar Circle. Bring a sign, bring a friend, and again, the message behind this is to encourage Congressman Hurt to go back to Washington here next week and take the bold steps to help do his part in fixing America.
All righty, and if people want to visit you online?
Yes, www.jeffersonteaparty.org. Information about the rally will be up on the site later today.
All right, terrific. Thanks so much for sharing with our audience, and we'll look forward to visiting with you on Friday, as you'll be here in the studio to kind of give us an update on the event that you held last week.
I look forward to it, Rob. Thanks again for the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks, Carol. Mm-hmm. All righty, we're heading into the break here. When we return, it is the living wage. We're going to have a tremendous discussion during the course of this hour, maybe getting to the bottom of it. It'll be interesting to see if we settle anything by the time we leave. But in the meantime, we're going to have very good information for you. David Swanson and David Murata are here in the studio, and they'll be with us when the Shilling Show returns. That's the phone number. During the course of this program, all points of view are welcome. Leon stands by to take your calls at 977-1070. And it's a show I've been wanting to have for a long time. You know, we touched on this subject, I think it's been about 2 years ago, when we had Jim Lark in the studio and a student from the University of Virginia. And the topic is a living wage, and it continues to come up seemingly annually within discussions inside City Hall, and also on the University of Virginia grounds. And so today I wanted to have two sides of this issue here in the studio with us, and I'm pleased to welcome back to the program David Swanson. It's been a while since you've been here. David, welcome.
Thanks.
And also David Murata, who appears on the program regularly. David Swanson is an author. You can visit him online at davidswanson.org. David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management, online at emurata.com. Gentlemen, I want to start out by perhaps setting some definitions for what this is, because in the conversations that I've had as a decision maker, as somebody who had to look at this as an elected official, the first problem was, how do you define it? David Swanson, what is the living wage? How do we define that?
Well, one way that you can define it and that the Living Wage campaign at UVA has done is to measure the needs of basic necessities of food and shelter and clothing and transportation for the costs of a particular area. And they come up with the need for a living wage of $11.44 an hour, which allows no luxuries. Anything goes wrong, you're in trouble. You can't afford insurance. You can't afford to go out to restaurants. You can't afford anything extra. Your car breaks down, forget it. But basic necessities, and you mark that as a minimal standard. Just as we forbid child labor, we forbid unsafe workplaces, we set minimum standards. And above that, you can go any direction you want, but you can't go below that. And the city of Charlottesville has set just that standard and indexed it to the cost of living so that we don't have this debate every year. It's not rocket science. You take care of it and it's done. But UVA has yet to do that. And as the cost of living increases, the actual value of your wages decreases unless they're increased. And so we have this discussion not because we enjoy it, but because people can't survive on what the University of Virginia pays them. They don't make a basic living wage.
David Murata, what are your comments on the definition of the living wage, and would you define it any differently?
No, I think that's a great definition. So one of my questions, I think, would be that about half of the people who are on a minimum wage currently are under age 25, and about a fourth of them are age 16 and 19. So these people don't need a living wage. And so what one of the things that Great Britain does, which helps alleviate some of the negative consequences of minimum wage, is they set a lower minimum wage for people who are younger. So under 21 or under 25, maybe we should have a different minimum wage, because the average person on minimum wage is living with their parents and actually doesn't need $11.40 an hour. They need something less than that. And they need the opportunity to have what I would call a starter job. And I would call the minimum wage a starter wage. So one of the things that the minimum wage does is it makes it very difficult for those who are less skilled, meaning it's their first job, they don't have job skills. And some of the things you learn at a first job are tremendous. You learn to show up on time, you learn to be articulate, and these are the things that teenagers need. And we have a problem of teenage unemployment, that is, teenagers just not bothering to even look for a job because there's not jobs available that they can get.
All right, so David Swanson, your response to a two-tiered system.
Well, I was under the impression we were going to talk about a living wage at UVA, which clearly David is not. UVA is not employing teenagers. UVA is employing adults, and it has what it calls entry-level pay, but it has people receiving entry-level pay for decades. And so the fact that they call it entry-level pay doesn't change the fact that you have stories. Here's one example of stories of University of Virginia employees. Here's a man who's being paid $9 an hour with no benefits. My wife and I had our first child. She stayed home to take care of my baby daughter, and since my work at UVA provided our only income, we could hardly pay for food. So my mother-in-law was having to buy our groceries, even though I was working for dining services handing out food. The worst part of it all was that we had no health care, no nothing, and eventually we had to declare bankruptcy. This is a man who, after decades, works in UVA's academic buildings about 14 hours a day. And so the idea of different wages for teenagers in the general market is an interesting idea, but it provides rhetoric that's very misleading in the UVA debate. That's not what we're talking about here.
So, David Murata, let's go to University of Virginia and this concept of them providing the living wage, given that they are not employing teenagers. Do you still think that there are issues with it?
Well, let me just ask David some questions. Would you make it illegal for people to volunteer their time?
I don't think I came here to answer stupid questions. I think we're debating a serious policy question of whether we are going to require a minimum standard of pay. We're talking about people who can't volunteer their time, who can't go vote, who can't participate in debates like this, even if they didn't fear retribution for doing so, because they're working two and three jobs and not seeing their kids. Is that what we want to do to people or not? And then when they're able to make a living and have a minimal amount of free time and can participate in civic life, should they be able to volunteer their time for free? Of course. Of course they should.
So I mean, part of my problem is that the minimum wage laws or living wage laws or whatever you want to call them actually cause a lot of negative consequences in society that would be better addressed not by having a minimum wage or a living wage, but would be better addressed in some other methodology. So the wage itself causes so much win-win-win situations to be illegal that we ought not to have it, and we ought to solve the problem of poverty a different way.
Well, if that were true, of course, I would agree with you. I don't agree on the premise. In fact, there are people at UVA working full-time who are not given the dignity of a living wage. Instead, are dependent on subsidies from you and me. People who have to go to emergency rooms and have that subsidized, people who have to get food stamps, people who have to go through bankruptcy, people who have subsidized housing. And you know, always we have these debates and people pull out, oh, let's have better tax breaks for low-income people. Let's have earned income tax credits and so forth. This comes from groups that are not out there fighting for these things to begin with. But then you're talking about shifting the burden from incredibly wealthy employers like UVA to taxpayers. And the tax burden, of course, is in general being shifted ever more to working people. Maybe not the poorest of the working people, but the rest of us. And that, in the broad scope of things, I do not think is the solution.
So would you burden small business owners with a minimum wage of $11.40? Or is this just something that the rich University of Virginia can bear?
Well, here, you know, UVA for, you know, over a decade now has been saying we must follow the market. UVA is the market. UVA is the largest employer here. UVA is employing 21,000 people directly and many more through contractors. And nonetheless, you have small employers paying this living wage and more. Setting a standard for UVA that UVA is not following. UVA is below the market rate, despite being the largest employer sitting on a fortune and wasting gobs of money on ridiculous projects. So, you know, it's nice to have interesting ideas and arguments for the topic we're not discussing. And if we had infinite time, that would be fun. But the fact that you almost refuse to address the topic under discussion is a little suggestive, I think.
Well, one of the things that in my study of the minimum wage, and maybe we are talking about different topics, but one of the things in my study of the minimum wage is that most of the people, first of all, the minimum wage currently is only about 2% of the population. So it's a very small subset. And beyond that, it's mostly people who are young, who are in the services industry. And there are jobs for which $11.40 an hour, even at the university, are not worth it. So take, for example, washing the buses. That's something that they would pay less than $11.40 an hour, but they wouldn't pay more than that. And because of the wages at UVA, they just have dirty buses.
Well, UVA can pay people to clean its buses and everything else that it needs done and can pay a living wage and, in fact, can very, very easily afford it. In fact, to lift people who are now direct employees at UVA all up to this living wage standard and keep them there would be less than 1% of UVA's budget and probably another similar amount to bring up contracted employees whom UVA refuses to tell anyone how much they're making. But some of them, in fact, are making that federal minimum wage, which no one can live on. As a result, we have less money flowing into our economy. We have fewer jobs available because people are having to work two and three jobs. UVA has unrested employees, low morale employees, low loyalty, no community, the contracted employees resenting the direct employees, and you have careers at UVA without any sort of raises for seniority.
All righty, David Swanson and David Murata join us to discuss the living wage, and we welcome your calls. Chris will get to you when the show returns after the break. And if you have a comment or a question for either of our guests, 977-1070 is the phone number here on The Shilling Show. We welcome your calls. Also, send me an email, robs@wina.com. We'll be back right after the news. Stay with us. We have a line open for you at 977-1070, and callers on the line will get to you in just a moment. You can also send me an email, robs@wina.com. David Murata and David Swanson join us. We're talking about the living wage today and also peripherally about the concept of minimum wages in other applications. Let's go to the phones because we have callers who've been waiting for a long, long time. Let's say hello to Chris and Ron. Hold on, we'll get to you in just a moment. Chris, welcome to the Shilling Show. You're on with David and David.
Thank you very much for taking my call, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing well, Chris. Good to hear from you.
Good. Hello, David and David. How are you all?
Good.
Yeah, I applaud you both for coming on the air and trying to air your differences. I know it's not an easy thing to do nowadays. I've lived in Charlottesville all my life, and one thing I can tell you about the university is that it has driven up costs. It is very expensive to live in the city of Charlottesville, and there's no other reason other than the University of Virginia. It is the premier state university in the country, apparently, and that brings a lot of money. It brings a lot of wealthy students, a lot of wealthy families. They pay a lot of rent, and the rents go up. And I understand this end of the argument. I agree with that end of the argument. I don't think that a living wage should be brought on anyone other than the university. I don't think it should go to other businesses. I don't think that applies. I think it should only apply to the university if it is to be taken on at all. And also, when you all are arguing or trying to make your points, this is something I've seen very, very common in our society, that one side or the other gets upset and the emotions start causing names to be flying around. That really does not help the situation. I think people need to keep calm heads. We've got serious problems in this country, and we've got to keep our heads about us and work together. And with that, I will hang up and listen. Thank you.
Chris, thanks very much for the call. Either one of you comment on Chris's statement?
Well, I don't recall David calling me any names, and I haven't called him any names. So hopefully we will be in accordance with Chris's recommendation there. But I agree with him on the costs. When you have two, three, four wealthy students splitting the costs of an apartment, and you have a family that needs to afford an apartment in the same town, you have a problem. And this is why many UVA employees have to commute long distances to work at UVA. And this is all of which is part of why they need to have enough money to survive if they're going to keep working there.
Go ahead.
I think I agree that the that handling low-wage earners who are supporting families ought to be a burden on society. So I agree with the earned income tax credits. In fact, I think that ought to be the primary means by which
we... You don't agree with me on that. You agree with somebody on that.
Well, okay. I mean, I agree that we ought to have a safety net to catch the people who are struggling to support their families. What would be odd is to burden the university with that. I realize the university, it's easy to take shots at them because they are the elephant in Charlottesville, and when they move, they end up crushing lots of people. But if you paid more than a job was worth, and I'm assuming that they could get it for less. In other words, they're currently getting someone, you said, for $9 an hour now. The person doesn't have any choices. If they paid $11.40 an hour, what would you do for someone who came in and said, I really need a job and I can do that job for 10? Would you just not let them have a job? Or would you just say, well, if you're willing to do it for 10, then we will fire this person who we now are requiring $11.40? In other words, what do you do with people who are willing to work for less than what you would call a living wage to do whatever the job is?
You say, sir, I appreciate that, and you're hired, and I'm going to give you that 10 plus another $1.14. And if you want to give that to charity, Dave Murata can fill you in on some good groups to give it to. But we're going to pay you that because we don't pay less than that because we don't force our workers to live in poverty and never see their families and never see their children. Family values to us doesn't just mean be a bigoted person who hates people. Family values means we value families and time at home and the lower crime rate that follows.
Right. So if you only have one job, how do you decide who to give it to when you've got people who are bidding lower than what you're legally agreeing to pay? How do you handle that?
You hire the people most qualified for the job.
Okay, and would you admit then that the university would hire more and more qualified people, and those less skilled workers who maybe they need that starter job to learn to show up on time, to develop their people skills, to develop their articulate, that they would have to find a job outside of the university?
I would not. It's utter nonsense. The UVA is not you know, choosing whether or not to have service industry jobs, cooking and cleaning jobs, washing buses jobs. Washing a bus will remain washing a bus, regardless of whether we go back to allowing child labor or slavery. It will still be washing a bus. The nature of the job does not change. UVA has far more than enough money. That the idea of poor, struggling UVA or the poor, struggling starter workers and teenagers, these are all non sequiturs here. We're talking about an incredibly wealthy institution. And if it were not incredibly wealthy, we are a democracy. You ask the community of UVA, you ask the city of Charlottesville, you ask the state of Virginia, you ask the United States of America, in each and every case, you're going to get, yes, institute this living wage. Now, you'll have find some brilliant economists who will tell you it's not a bad idea. But if you're going to have the slightest respect for democracy, why anywhere else and not here?
Let's get a quick response, and we've got full phones. I want to get to them. David Morata?
Well, I think the answer would be because there's a lot of jobs for which $11.40 is too much. So just as an example at the university, a student who sits or a librarian who sits between 10 a.m. and 2 in the morning to keep the library open and can study to go back to school to get a higher education and improve himself, that job may be worth $2 an hour to him because he's sitting there studying 90% of the time and then he locks up at 2 in the morning and he'd be studying anyway. And we cut off all the jobs like that and we close our libraries early.
Let's go to the phones and say hello on line number 2 to Ron and Jack. And Jim, hold the line. We're going to get to you in a moment. Ron, welcome to the Shilling Show. A question for the guests or a comment?
I actually have a question. I'd like to know how many, what percentage of wage earners would be affected by this? One of the Davids, I forget which last name is which, but made the comment earlier that only 2% of the workforce is affected by the minimum wage. Well, then, based on UVA, what percentage of workers is it that this is related to?
All right. Do we have a quick response?
Well,
you know?
At UVA, according to the Living Wage Campaign, it's less than that. It's about 850 out of nearly 21,000 direct employees and an unknown number of contract employees because despite the fact that UVA puts all kinds of safety standards and investment standards on its contracts, it chooses not to ask its contractors what they pay.
All righty, back into it, and the phone lines are full once again, so let's go to the phones immediately. We're talking with David Swanson, David Morata. The concept and the topic of today is the living wage. Of course, this is up at the university, and they're talking a lot about it there. I'm grateful to our two guests for coming into the studio to have this discussion. We did attempt to invite somebody directly from the university and did not have any takers, so I'm glad that David Swanson is here to respond to this issue on behalf of the Living Wage Campaign. And let's go to Jack. Kenneth, we'll get to you in just a minute. Jack, welcome to the Shilling Show. I appreciate you holding on.
Hello, gentlemen. Excellent show. These are the kind of debates we need to be having in public. Mr. Morata, could you maintain your standard of living for $11 an hour?
No, I would definitely have to cut it back.
Okay. All right, fine. That's all I want to know. Now, here's the other. I just want to say something here. Henry Ford paid his workers enough for them to buy his product. Okay? Now, UVA is not a lawn mowing business. Okay, we all know that. But can the workers at UVA all afford the product? Let's say an example of a person working at UVA. Can they all afford, an education at the university and, go to the hospital, just use all the services there for whatever they're making or...
There's certainly no question that UVA is one of the best deals you could possibly get at. I'm sure the people who mow the lawns at Harvard could not afford Harvard. I'm sure the people who mow the lawns at Yale cannot afford
Yale. How about the people that work over at the car dealers selling cars in this town? Do you think they could afford to buy the cars they're selling?
If you're asking...
The answer is no.
If you're asking the question as to whether the need...
It was a rhetorical question. The answer is no. They can't even afford the cars they're selling. That's how low that's they're making garbage.
Well, actually, I have to take contention with that because I have a friend who was working at Brown Honda who bought a car there, and he's not a wealthy guy. All righty, thank you. I think you've made your point. Let's go to Kenneth, who's been waiting on line number 3. And, Leon, you can grab line number 2 for us. Kenneth, go right ahead. You're on with the Davids.
Hello, everybody. I want to know, why is it this $9 an hour bus washer does not develop a skill or talent, learn a trade, or get a degree so that he's no longer making $9 an hour? In other words, just show up out of high school and say, here I am, give me $11.43 for my just showing up to work, whether I do anything or not, is, I think, ridiculous. He is responsible for himself. He is responsible for bringing enough money home, and in order to do so, he needs training. Even the people who are on welfare are required to get training. Thank you.
Well, Kenneth, thank you very much.
Yeah, Kenneth makes a great point, and that is that if you require $11.40 an hour, one of the things that the university will cut is they will cut training, they will cut benefits. It's true that minimum wage can either be paid in things that are taxed and count as the wage, or they can be paid in intangibles like job training and benefits. And if you expand it to the minimum wage debate in general, I think most employers would rather give someone minimum wage and benefits than a higher wage, because benefits aren't taxed.
That's certainly true, but to be fair to the Living Wage campaign at UVA, their demand, if you look at the specifics, includes the benefits, and there would be no reduction in the benefits, and they would be indexed along with the living wage, and this would cease to be an issue. And the fact is that people who have to work two jobs and three jobs to avoid bankruptcy do not have time to go out and pursue educations, and as the previous caller mentioned, couldn't begin to afford to, not just at UVA or anywhere else, if they are employed at UVA, because they don't have any extra money for education, and they still wouldn't at the living wage. They would need more than that.
Following up on real quickly, and we've got phones coming here in just a few minutes left, following up on Kenneth's comment, we did have a listener write in via email basically saying that she was in attendance at Charlottesville High School City Schools at $19,000 a pop and saw people wasting their days in school, and then they come out and go to work at UVA, and she says, and then I'm supposed to harass UVA to pay them more. A quick comment from either of you? Do you take contention with that there are people who just waste their education and then come out and want to land on a cushy job?
Certainly there are, but they aren't landing on cushy jobs, and nobody's talking about cushy jobs. We're talking about being able to eat and have a roof over your head and nothing more in a society that's rolling in money, where 400 of us have as much money and far more political power than 155 million of us. This is the larger picture we're dealing with. We could solve every problem under discussion here with regard to UVA for the cost of three or four of those missiles that we're launching by the hundreds into Libya. Tell your Tea Party friends.
I don't think the Tea Party is supporting the missile launches in Libya, but we are getting far.
I didn't hear a word about it from Carol there.
So again, David, you've expanded this beyond to society, in which case I would answer the earned income tax credits as the right solution. But you want to put this burden onto UVA in particular, not onto who's ever taxing us to launch the missiles. And you and I would agree with a lot of things. You're very mistrustful of presidential power and of government and of big business. I am very trustful of small business, and I would want to make sure that small businesses are not burdened with societal problems. And so I would want to see UVA is big enough.
Is UVA a small business?
Yeah, UVA is big enough, so it's easy to hate them. But I would say
we're not hating anybody, and we're not talking about any small businesses. We're talking about better policies at the university we love. Period.
Yeah, but it's easier to envy them. I see so many things where they could employ people at a lower than minimum wage, and they don't. And therefore, the services are not given at UVA, that I would want to cut them the slack to be able to decide what jobs are worth it and what jobs aren't, and pay on the basis of the value of the job, not on the need of the person getting it. Because if that were the case, we would employ everyone in Charlottesville.
But this mysticism about the value of the job, as if you somehow have access to that magical number, is nonsense and fraudulent. The job is worth what we say it's worth. You know, it's not as low as you can go.
Is a product worth what we say it's worth? I mean, if you go to buy a car, let's go to the car thing. I mean, what the car dealer said, it's $50,000 and you're going to pay it whether you want to or not. That's the price for a new car.
But am I a product? Is David a product?
Sure.
Or are we human beings?
No, you're a product.
In a society.
You are a product who's working for value.
Yeah, that's a problem. When you turn people into products and you forget that they have wives and husbands and kids and neighbors, you've lost the story.
We are almost out of time. Let's go to the phones again before we run out. And let's see here. Let's go to line number one. Charlie, welcome to the Shilling Show. Go right ahead quickly, please.
I agree with your guest that there has to be a certain value, a minimum value, whereas people can go and buy a loaf of bread and pay for their housing. Is very expensive in Charlottesville. Food is moderately expensive, and to pay people like $3 an hour, sub minimum wage. What are you going to get elementary school kids to do that?
Let's get a response real quickly. Either of the guests?
Well, that's taking it to the extreme, which is where the logic takes it. You have to have some limits here. And the new president, Teresa Sullivan, should come in and set humane ones, and we wouldn't have to have this debate. And much fun as it is, we wouldn't have to do it next year.
Ken's on line three. Ken, go right ahead. 30 seconds.
Rob, real quick, what I find most interesting about this, regardless of the merits of a minimum wage or a living wage, I find it very interesting that we're even having this discussion. Here, UVA, an academic institution, and, you know, like all academic institutions, very much on the political spectrum to the left, presuming to tell private business how to run their affairs and questioning, you know, the ethics and the salary structure of the private enterprise, and we're having this business, this discussion about UVA. I mean, how often do we hear in private business, the CEO makes 1,000, 10,000 times what the janitor makes? Well, how much does the president of UVA and her deans and everything else make ratio-wise compared to the lower-paid workers at UVA? I just think, you know, it's more hypocrisy, and UVA deserves all the criticism that they're getting, regardless of whether, you know, the merits of a fair wage.
All righty, that's going to have to wrap it up. David Swanson and David Morata, it has been really an invigorating hour. I want to thank you both for joining us today on the program. I'd love to do it again. I don't think we covered all the ground we needed to get to. Thank you, gentlemen.
That's great. Thank you.
All righty. And we're heading into the break, and when the Shilling Show returns, we've got a lot more to go. Michael Del Rosso will be with us. Chet Nagel will be with us, and there's a special event coming up at Teddy Roosevelt's Pine Knot. We're going to talk about all of that when the Shilling Show returns. Stay with us, please.